Hi, I'm Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen. I'm a personal functional medicine practitioner for high performers and professional athletes. And I've worked with athletes in many different sports, from the U.S. sailing team to endurance sports and triathlon, CrossFit, and professional tennis players across the board in any sport. Maintaining a foundation of a healthy body and mind is crucial for long-term success. This is the podcast that will show you how to apply the principles of a healthy body and mindset to achieve high performance, all from the inside out. This is the Fit and Healthy Athlete Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Fit and Healthy Athlete Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Kirsten Lauritsen, and today I have Coach Michelle Lake with us. She is with 5-3 Racing. Yes. And she's a former collegiate swimmer and conference champion, which is like, I'm like envious, really. I wish I had gotten into swimming sooner now that I do triathlon. She's also a USAT level 2 endurance coach since 2013 and a level 1 coach since 2010 after starting triathlon and road running races in 2006. She is a 5-time Ironman finisher, 19-time 70.3 finisher, four-time 70.3 world championship qualifier, and 7-time marathon finisher, and 2-time USAT All-American. That is amazing. First off, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, really excited to have you. That's an impressive bio. Would you like to go into a little more detail as far as what you do, how you got into triathlon? Let's just start off with that.
Okay, so 2006, I wanted to get back into sport. So I did a triathlon clinic and I did a triathlon, and some of my friends were like, hey, it was like a month after my first one, let's go do an Ironman. I was like, sounds kind of risky, but let's try it. So signed up for Lake Placid back when you had to sign up for it a year in advance. So a whole year out, like I'd been done doing triathlon a month and I was already doing that. And then I did a half, and then I broke my collarbone a month before Lake Placid. Still did the race, but it wasn't as pretty as I'd hoped. Then I just have done them since, a lot of them, mostly sprints actually, and 70.3s are my favorite. I like the real short stuff and I like the moderately intense. Mm-hmm. That's why there's 19 of them. And I started coaching in 2010, went full-time in 2013. So almost 10 years now I've been working from home and just coaching. And right around 2013 is when I got my level 2 endurance, because my focus is on long course. I do coach people of all distances, but definitely in the longer course races is kind of my bread and butter, and helping people qualify for world championships. I've had a couple people qualify for the Bro Card. I've had 20 people qualify for Kona. It's actually 10 people 20 times. So I have to quantify that. It's not actually 20 different people, but so that's my big focus. I had my son in 2015. I almost forgot what year. So he's 6 now. And since then I've been focusing on qualifying myself for 70.3 world. So that's my big race this year. It'll be my 4th since he's been born. I try to do things a little differently now and focus more on my racing in a very specific time frame. Like I train a little bit year round, and then I spend about 2 months a year really focused. And then I kind of go back to being all about business and family, so that I can still race, but I'm not one of those people that trains like all year round a lot. So
that's a good balance. I like to, that's actually really neat.
Yeah. So, and it's a lot of it's for motivation, because, you know, I think it's 16 years. Yeah. 16 years of doing this. There's not many people that are still doing it that haven't burned out. So it helps me to kind of, like, I'm in a low period right now. I'm not going to do much. And then in, I guess, July or so, I'll probably pick it back up for 70.3 worlds. But so that's kind of, that's all about me.
That's great. So, gosh, there's so much to dive into there already. Just based off of that alone, I'm actually curious, so that's a really interesting way to kind of pair having a family, being a mom, and then also still being in triathlon. I know that I personally have a lot of questions about that,
yeah.
about how to marry the two and still be able to train and do something for you, but also still be, you know, active with your family, and with as being a mom, which is a lot, I know. How do you work with that? I mean, is there anything else that you do beyond that of just like, okay, you've got a set period of time where you really focus on your training and then it's sort of, just, you know,
well, I do. Luckily the whole work from home part makes it a lot easier. I don't know if it would be as doable. Like I'll tell my crazy story. So I had my son and then I signed up for Lake Placid again. To do that one, it was gonna be my third time, but I signed up to do it. So it was like, I think he was 11 months old. So I signed up when I was pregnant and I was like, well, if I don't do it, it's okay. But so I signed up anyway. And then I signed up for Eagle Man because I was like, well, I need a half. Oh, yeah. And then I got a free entry for Puerto Rico. And at Puerto Rico, I qualified for 70.3 worlds on a roll down. And I'm like, well, this is just kind of crazy. So I took it and was to Australia and it happened to be on my son's first birthday. So somehow, and within the first year of my son's life, I did three halves and a full, and it was crazy. I would never recommend it, but it taught me a lot about like time management. And I was way more motivated to get out the door because I knew I had like this much time, and I did a lot of stroller miles and my son loved it. So that was, it was like our time together. Yeah. Trying to think what else it was. A lot of early mornings. My son did go to daycare when he was 5 months old, so that helped. But yeah, so it was kind of just managing time and trying to fit things in. And my husband was really pretty helpful about it too. He knows I need to be doing these things to kind of keep my health, mental health, and things.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I would say it takes a lot of work to make it work, but you can do it.
Sure.
I think the biggest problem with small kids though is illness. I was sick the whole time. Like it was very hard to stay healthy because he was in daycare and he'd have a cold and I've had a cold and that's that whole, like we weren't sleeping well cause he was new, you know?
Yeah.
So totally. Yeah, but yeah, you've got to keep it balanced. You know, if these people that want to be in it long-term, it's really hard. And the last thing I'll say about it is, one place I'm sort of lucky is that I have, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist, but pretty much every triathlete has some level of exercise addiction. Mine is on the low side. So I can kind of be happy with a 30-minute run. I don't need to be training 2 hours a day, every
yeah.
day.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I'm not diagnosing people, but I've definitely coached people that have had a need to do a large amount of training every day. I don't have that. So I can kind of, go up and down on it. And that really helps. And I also think it helps me as a coach to not have that so that I can try to keep them more in the health range of things instead of overtraining and stuff. So.
Yeah. Let's actually dive into that for a second too. I know from just watching you over social media and being, friends-ish for a bit that you have a little bit of a different philosophy in some senses when it comes to training. You like to look at not just the training but also the health of the athlete as well. Yes. And it's not just focusing on training, but there's more than that. What led you to want to incorporate that into your coaching, and then also like what all does that encompass? Like what do you focus on as far as your athletes go?
So I don't know when it was, maybe like 2012, 2013, sometime back then. I started, when I would do calls with new athletes, I'd say there's this much stuff going on in your training or your life. This is your training. And these things are your, the five other things that are as important, and then I will spend as much time on both. So, and these five things are hydration, nutrition, electrolytes, race planning and prep, and mental toughness, mental mindset, whatever you want to call it, mental training. This is really more specific for long course. Short course, you can kind of get away a little bit with a little less of these things.
Definitely.
So that's kind of been my mantra, my foundation, whatever you want to call it, for a long time. But so when we're preparing for those longer course races, we need to go over all those things. Most athletes, when they come to me, they're like, I want to get faster. Okay. Well, what was your hydration or nutrition plan? They're like, you know, I just, you know, and, or they didn't have any salt when they were racing, or they, you know, didn't have enough calories, or they didn't even know how much hydration, and it came, you know, and we start looking at things and they do a 5-hour bike ride and they lose 5% of their body weight. Like, there we go. That's why your Ironman run was so bad, because you're drastically dehydrated. So, I've been in the industry kind of long enough that I think a lot of triathlon coaches are either scared or to talk about nutrition because they think they're not allowed to, or they don't have the time per athlete to do it. They don't value that because it's hard. It's kind of a complicated thing. Personally, I had some big improvements in 2011, 2012 timeframe where I figured out hydration myself. I'm a pretty heavy sweater. For a woman, it sucks. It's really bad. So when I figured that out, I PR'd my half Ironman on a really hot day. I was like, and I found out I needed to drink 35 ounces an hour on the bike. So which is a lot for a woman, especially. I'm tall, I'm 5'11". So that's, but still that's a lot.
Yeah.
So when I figured that out, I went from 5:30, 5:35, 35:30 to 5:07 on a 95 degree day and ran better, ran the whole thing and ran great for me. So it was like eye opening. So then I've studied, learned all those things from other coaches, from courses I've taken, from experience. And my big mantra in those things is not that I tell you what to do, is that we practice, 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 and we log.
Yes.
So we log every week. Yes. So every long ride. And I'll tell you, to this day, my athletes fight me on it. Some of them, I don't think have ever done it. I've coached them 6, 7, 8 years, have never written it down. And every time I'm like, athletes, I'm fighting an uphill battle, as you probably are with what you're doing. They don't want to do it. They want to do the long monotonous training. Mm-hmm. They don't want to do the little details. So it's a constant fight. But when I do convince them and they make big improvements, people are like, wow, like what happened? I'm like, well, they focused on, they actually spent time working on mindset. They wrote a race plan and build their watts on the bike. They didn't just go hard and then die. It's rarely a training problem unless somebody comes in undertrained. So that's that's the reason I look across, like if there's a problem with somebody that's got unexplained issues going on, the first thing I say is go get blood work done.
Yep.
That's, I mean, and go see your doctor or see somebody that can help. I can't read that, but you know, when there's, if someone's having continuous soreness or any other issues.
It's a good place to start.
Lastly, I'll say another thing that a lot of people ignore is life TSS, or training stress score, that we use on Training Peaks.
Yes.
They don't account for life TSS. And I would say 50% of injuries come when somebody has really high life TSS. So They come together. Stress is high. They're working too hard. They're not sleeping. They get hurt. It always happens that way. Or not always, but often. So I'm trying to look at all these things. And that's where the improvements come. It's not because I gave some magical training plan. I mean, that's important, but it's not that. So that's kind of my thing.
Totally. I heard a quote from Usain Bolt that he would spend for like 50% of the time he would like spend training. And then the entire other 50% was spent dealing with recovery and optimizing recovery as best as he possibly could. And I don't think that that is I think that's a very, very, very big part of why he was and is as successful as he is. And one of the fastest runners. And I think there's just so much there that, you know, it's like, these are people who are at the very tippy top of their peak performance, and they are spending so much time focused on recovery. And so, you know, and that's not just like resting, that's also nutrition. Just as you mentioned, that's paying attention to overall life stress, like such a big one, right? Like, overall life stress, I always say, like, talk to my athletes and I'm like, look, I want you to think about it this way. Like, if you are dealing with a lot of stuff right now in your life, let's dial back the intensity on your training just a little bit, just so you can still train, but like, let's not try to go, you know, balls to the wall, like just yeah. so much load, because you are potentially setting yourself up for an injury or an illness that is completely avoidable. So, you know, let's just be aware of when life is handing you a few things that are just way too much on your plate, and be very conscious of your training, and then know that like that life piece will not last forever. It will go down at some point. And then that's a really good time to then adjust your training again and make changes there. I mean, there's always things that we can adjust as far as like nutrition and health and all of those pieces to try to counteract that a bit, but still it's better to try and take an overall approach of like, if there's a lot of stress, like let's just dial it back a little bit and not be trying to push it so hard that we end up with an injury. And you know, you might as well make the best of the training that you have, right?
And I have crazy stories in my years of experience, like a guy who was deciding he had to close his shop and fire his employees. And he was driving down and he made the decision that he was going to do it, driving down his Ironman. And in his Ironman, when he had no injury risk, nothing that he had done in training caused any pain, he broke his foot in the race. Like full on stress fracture, like not a little one, a big one. And it was like no pain before then. And I was like, yeah, it was your stress from that. And then just this week, and one of my athletes is going through a big audit. For healthcare audit. And she was in the gym with her personal trainer, like she is all the time, mm-hmm. doing her strength work. And she like strained her hamstring. And it's like, no, she's done this every, you know, twice a week for years. And it happens all the time. And people and athletes want to push through for stress relief instead of realizing that their stress is already extremely excessive at some, you know.
So. And that training is a stressor, you know, I mean, like we look at exercises, like it's this stress relieving activity, which it can be at a certain point, but like for athletes that are training 10 plus hours a week or more, it's actually a stressor, not necessarily a stress reliever. Definitely. And so, yeah, especially, you know, anytime you're looking at it in the context of high stress or autoimmune or injury or any of those types of pieces, we also have to remember that training is a stressor at that rate. And so, yeah, I'm like right there with you, and I love it.
I know we're very aligned, and it's
so good.
It's funny because it's really not the way the industry talks. Like it's just like one of our acquaintances was like, you should start a podcast. I'm like, there are already 5 million training podcasts, and it's boring. And that's what everybody talks about is how to maximize everything in training. And that's not where it is. Like that's cool. It's helpful, but it's not. Mm-hmm. It's not the thing that's going to get you better.
Yeah.
You have to be looking at these other things.
Yes. And I would say that your voice is needed. So I will encourage you in that for sure. Although as you are saying, like it is a struggle, it is an uphill battle in a sense, because athletes don't want to think about it. And they just want to focus on their training. And I totally understand that, but just as you said, like the thing that I always try to like frame it as is like, okay, the people who end up coming to me, like the athletes who end up coming to work with me, are at the point where they focus so much on their training that their body is now having issues and breaking down, and they actually don't have a solution for what's going on. And it's not just pulling them out of training, but for some, especially like pro athletes, it's their contracts that are up for grabs, you know, and potential for not renewing those. Their sponsors, you know, I've had people who have had a decline in performance so much that they've lost a few sponsors. And that time is very, very stressful. And so like, if you can focus on these things before that point, that's the idea, right? Is not coming and doing all of this stuff at the time where you're already starting to see problems come from it. So there's quite, prevention, right? Like it would be ideal to see.
It's funny with it's funny because when the athletes do figure it out, they're like, mm-hmm. what?
Yeah, like, but why didn't I do this before?
It takes so much convincing. And even when I'm an athlete, I have to force myself to write down. Like one of the biggest things is writing. Like, yes. I have to write down after a race, I'm write down what you did, what went, what, you know, 'cause you forget. They're like, what was the nutrition I used in the race to work really well last time? Like, you forget, or mm-hmm. what was your pacing, or what was the, you know, and then when you look and you go back and do that next, the same race again, you're like, wait, there's, oh yeah, I did this. Okay. Or even at the same race, the same distance, you can say, you can learn from what you've done.
Yep.
And there's so much like just kind of winging it. But you weigh somebody, I don't like to weigh people in if they have, you know, weight issues or whatever, but, I have a young guy training for Texas and he, yeah, lost 12 pounds or something on it. And it turns out, then we realized that he doesn't have a really good fan. You would love him, this guy too. He's like, he doesn't eat a lot of, he's kind of vegetarian. And he's like, yeah, I eat plenty of protein. And then one day he logged it. He's like, yeah, I'm actually only like, he told me he was where he needed to be. He's like, yeah, I'm only thinking like 50 grams a day. I'm like, you know, no wonder you've been feeling off sometimes. So yeah, all these things are so important. And
they are.
The problem in the industry is it's hard for us to get paid to do all these things.
I know.
And you have to be really efficient with your time to get the athletes to buy in. So.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. So, you know, as far as like your experience being a coach for, gosh, as long as you have been, you've actually decided to kind of take a bit of an extra step beyond just coaching triathletes and athletes, but you're also looking to coach coaches as well, as far as like how to build a successful coaching business.
Yeah. So it kind of came in a backwards way because the, our joint friend Shante was like, you should do a podcast. And I said,
the best.
Should do a podcast. And then I was like, no, there's too many of them and they're boring. To me, I just thought, you know, everything's been said already. So I was just like driving around one day, 'cause you know, like random ideas come to you in weird times. And, I go, why don't I talk about being a coach? And then I started researching it and I Googled, you know, podcast, try coach, coaching, or, you know, whatever. And I couldn't find a podcast about it. And then I started searching a little bit more and there's some people that are kind of on the fringe doing it, but there was nobody really doing it. And I go, wow, there's a lot of people that need mentors. And then I started looking at other triathlon coaches, like Instagram pages and other things. And I was like, they could probably be optimizing these things a lot better.
Totally.
So using all those, and I've been doing this a long time. I've also created two triathlon teams in the 12 years. And that's a whole other monster, or I don't know. It's a good thing. It's a good thing, but it is a lot of interest. It's a different thing to do. So I've done that as well. So I have experience there. So I have those, you know, I've run camps so I can help people coach camps. Like I've run 8 of the same camp. So there's just a lot of experience that I can leverage to help other coaches, totally. Because it's not easy. And what I'm finding is that most triathlon and endurance, because I'm looking to help with like all endurance, you know, swim coaches, run coaches, bike coaches, probably mostly triathlon, but
all of that.
But yeah. I feel like in our industry, most are hobbyists, meaning I'm coaching a few people for fun.
Yes.
Or they are resistant to label themselves as entrepreneurs or business people.
Yeah.
Okay. So they are like, oh no, I'm a tri coach. I don't need to run a business. I just get referrals and but if I want more clients, hopefully they'll come to me. There's not a lot of, I don't know how to, I'm still trying to formulate my ideas about how I feel about these things. It's still kind of a new endeavor, but it just feels, you know, like I was this way. I worked in a bigger company before where there were 9 coaches and I was lucky because I had a lot of referrals, so I didn't really we didn't do much marketing or anything. And then I started my own company with one of the coaches of the 9 when that first company kind of a lot of the coaches gave up on it. So we started 5-3 in 2016 when my son was just about 1, right after I got back from that Australia trip. So that was a busy year. So we started this and at first I got a lot of referrals and then I was still doing pretty well. I still get a ton of referrals, but it wasn't enough to kind of like grow past, like I was kind of stagnant. And then COVID happened and I was pretty lucky, but you lost like 20% because of COVID. And then I realized my son was going back to school. And I was like, wait a second. I just had a coworker. you know, from ages 4 to just turning 6, who was sitting next to me for the entire, like, he did kindergarten next to me in the house. So I'm like, wow, what can I do if I have a full day instead of having a 5-year-old with me all day?
Yeah.
So I kind of went like gangbusters on the business side, and it was more about learning than actually implementing. I mean, I did both, but that's mm-hmm. kind of where my own entrepreneurial, I think Shantae called it renaissance recently. That's kind of what it was for me. I was like, wait a second, I have more time now. What should I do with this? So that's kind of what happened to me. And then I learned a lot. And then it was when I was thinking through all these things, it's like, wow, I could help other people. And obviously when I started marketing and doing more and talking to more people and getting out there more, not that I wasn't getting out there, but I was thinking of things as a coach only and not as a business person. So when I kind of shifted my thinking there, then things were blowing up. I was getting a lot more clients. We're getting a lot more inquiries, like just super busy. I'm full now, but one-for-one swap, somebody comes in, somebody comes out.
Sure.
So that all that being said, like it takes that shift. And I think most triathlon coaches in the country or mm-hmm. the world are not fully there.
Right.
Not all, but most. And also if I look back at like when I went to USAT training in 2010 and then level 2 in 2013, and all the people I know that have gotten certifications, there's not probably 10% of us are left. Right. If you get back. I don't know many people still really coaching a lot.
Interesting. So
yeah.
What do you think is like, what are a couple of problems that coaches face just in the industry in general?
I think probably the biggest one is it's not a very profitable endeavor. In many cases, they're probably making more money doing whatever their job is. So they do it as a hobby instead. But then when they do it as a hobby and you have things like renewals, and renewals being like your certifications, insurance, website, taxes, because as much as there's some benefits from the tax side, there's also just doing the taxes, which is way more difficult. Sure. So when you go to all that kind of stuff, I think it gets overwhelming and you're like, is it still worth it? You know, it would have just be easier just to do my own training and do my job. You know, that part is hard. I was kind of lucky in the way my husband and I kind of worked it out. I was working at a company that I had to work 85 hours a pay period as a government contractor. And sometime in like 2010, right around when I was getting certified, I was just taking leave an hour here, an hour there, just so I could, I had an hour and a half commute. Like it was really bad. Just so I could train more, meet up with people to train or do whatever. And then I talked to my boss. I said, can I go part-time, like work 70 hours a pay period? I don't really care about the pay. I want to work less. I don't want to take leave all the time. And he said, sure. And then I kept doing that until 2013 when I went full-time, where I made the jump because I was going to go to my husband's health insurance.
Gotcha.
So that part's the hard part, right? Like, how do you get health insurance? How do you do all that kind of stuff? It's hard. Doing what I did took a lot of good luck, and it took my husband's, you know, having that support. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that are full-time coaches that spouse has the insurance, or they have, you know, or they're like pro triathletes that are like, you know, the latest one is they're all turning into realtors. Like they're a realtor, yes. they're a tri coach, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, there's like
lots realtors or Airbnb. I've seen that one as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Airbnb so, management. Mm-hmm.
So it's an interesting, you know, I think people come into it and they're like, I want to be a tri coach. It'd be awesome. I can write off all the stuff on my taxes, which, you know, I'm not going to comment on. And then they see how much is actually involved and they're like, God, and we don't have a lot of experience. Like when you're only working with one or two athletes, it's kind of hard to get traction versus when you have a lot, it's like a snowball rolling down the hill with referrals, because you just have more people talking about you. And but even with that, you need to, at some point, if you want to keep growing, you need to do some marketing. Like you can't just do it all. So I think those are the big things. This is what I'd like to help people kind of navigate through, because there is a huge benefit to get where I'm sitting. It's pretty amazing. everyone, I get told daily, like, you have the dream job, such an amazing job, but there are challenges to it. So, and picking what investment, both in time and money, and what order, like, do I need a website? Do I need business cards? Well, you probably don't, I don't even have business. I don't think you need business cards. But do you need, should you get certified? Should you do an email newsletter? Should you spend time on social media? Should you create a team? That's a big one. Should you get kits and gear? Mm-hmm. Like, how to do all that stuff? That's the kind of stuff I want to help people kind of figure out, what's their best placement with their time and money to get to a point where they can become more feasible financially.
Totally. But,
yeah.
Totally. Oh gosh, I don't even know where to take it from here. I think there's, I can see how, gosh, just even with me, like, choosing the coach that I have now, I was referred to him because of, like, my sister was referred to him through somebody that she knew through CrossFit. And, you know, it was just, okay, like, that's the one person really that I knew. So, like, yeah, like, let's go with that. And then also too, like, of course we hopped on the phone, and very similarly, he focuses as well on, like, all of the other pieces beyond just training. He's really, really good about that. And what's cool is he's taken a lot of time to, like, learn about the female body, and as far as, like, periods and all of that, and training around your cycle and stuff. And so just being on that, like, initial conversation with him, I was like, yeah, I feel like I'm in good hands. So So
our industry is rife. Some of the stories I get told, like, from people coming from other places, I'm just in awe, like, especially in the nutrition side, like, you know, do an Ironman where you alternate water and a drink, and that's about it. That's my nutrition plan for you and stuff. Like, and just the stuff that goes down is, but it's great when you find somebody that's really knows what's going on. Another common one is kind of being a young, fast person and coaching all of your athletes of different ages in that way. You know, we have, I have a co-coach that works with me. And she has a 72-year-old athlete who wins everything. He does. He's amazing. And he's really fast. And but he's got to be coached completely differently than the 22-year-old. I mean, it's like night and day different, right? So and those are things that some in our industry sometimes gets overlooked. It's just like, just train the same way, or, you know, like, a menopausal woman is going to be trained differently than a younger male, you know? So that's something that's very important to note.
Yeah. So for athletes, as far as, like, maybe even just, like, suggestions as far as what to look for a coach, if somebody might be doing, like, Training Peaks or some other type of, just, like, that's their program, is they get something from one of those, they don't have a coach, right? Do you have any, like, recommendations of what it would be good for them to just, like, ask and look for as far as, like,
in a coach?
In a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So probably the big thing is, are you, like, do you communicate on the same, like, level, and is the communication level something that you look for? You know, what's the hands-on going to be? Do you just want to plan and you go execute it? Or do you want someone that's going to be interacting with you daily? That's a big thing. And I think that sometimes people don't necessarily value. They may look at a cheaper coach and not realize that they're going to get a plan for 4 weeks and then not talk to them for 4 weeks. So you got to kind of balance those things. Their experience level, you know, a lot of coach bios when you're researching are almost entirely written about their results as a coach, as an athlete, and not very much about what their athletes have done. So I always would ask that, like, the bio may read like 4 times Kona qualifier, but, you know, whatever, but what have you done with your athletes? Like, if your goal is to get faster, or is your goal accountability, or is your goal, I mean, it could be many goals, but it's interesting because when you actually ask the athletes, why do you hire a coach? Sometimes they can't really answer it perfectly well. Like, there's a lot of little reasons, but you know, try to get in line with what they're, you know, if it's a group program, meaning like a beginner's program where the one coach coaches a bunch of people together, that may be better for you. Or sure, if you're a beginner, or if you're looking for somebody to qualify you for Worlds, you probably want to find someone that that's their expertise, you know? So you've got to kind of think about what you really want to do and what that coach offers, and then the value, not just the cheapest coach, because you may get, you know, not so great value. And I guess probably too, if you care about the data, how much they're in the data and how much they may just, like some coaches still coach, but just kind of like an Excel spreadsheet or a PDF or a piece of paper or something, like an email with like workouts at risk on it. And then there's other coaches that are doing, you know, Training Peaks and looking at all the metrics and that too. So you got to, you know, ask your questions and find out what you think about what you really want, and then make sure that that coach can provide that and do your research. When I do sales calls, I would say 50% or less have actually interviewed somebody else. Almost everybody's like referred to me, and then most are referred to me and don't have any plan to talk to anyone else, or they've already decided they just want to kind of finalize the deal. But I think it's probably a good idea. I'm not offended if you've talked to other coaches. I just would make sure that you, if it's, don't make it based just on price, like look at what you're getting for that price too, and what you want from that, from a coaching relationship.
Yeah. All real, I mean, I feel like I got really lucky just because I really didn't put a whole lot of effort into finding a coach. I was just like, that looks like something that I need, because my sister was training as well. And I was training on my own, and I was like seeing all the workouts that she was posting, and I was like, I think I need that. And so I think I got really lucky in that sense, because I didn't, you know, interview anybody else. But yeah, I can totally see how like all of those things would be a really good place to start, for sure.
I mean, if at the end of the day, if I would say anything to any business client, you know, in that side of it, if you're not getting any referrals, there's a problem.
Yeah.
You've got to go stop working on the business and work. Well, you should always, I guess, like do your money, your finances and stuff, but stop focusing on the marketing and focus on being a better coach.
Totally.
But if you're a good coach and you're getting referrals, but you want to grow and you want to make it like you have six clients and you want to have, you know, you want to go full time someday, you're going to have to probably do more than just referrals to get there quickly, like six, maybe 10 next year and 14 the next year, but it's not going to be, you're not going to suddenly get 20 inquiries in one day. If you're, you know, just a regular coach, I think some pro triathletes, like when they win a race, get more inquiries quickly, but I think just normal amateur coaches may not get that kind of marketing for free quickly. So but yeah, they're going to have to do something else. But if you're not getting referrals, that's going to tell you a lot about what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like I was able to stay at a pretty steady coaching load with zero marketing. I posted on Instagram, I think maybe five times during the pandemic.
Sure.
And nobody was going anywhere doing any races. So it was just kind of steady, and I was happy with that, for that time. But you watch where your referrals are, because that's really where I don't know what the percentage is, but I would guess in most businesses, majority of the marketing is kind of getting you that growth.
Yes.
Staying. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually heard this for the business side of this conversation. I heard a comment like, it's really, really common, especially in the start of business. And I'll admit, like, I've also had this issue as well on occasion, like throughout the time that I've been trying to build my practice, where you're just focusing on like the next person and the next person and the next person because you want to grow. But then I also am reminded often, like, focus on the people that you have, because when you focus on the people that you have and you do a really, really good job, like, then they have a tendency to refer. And, yeah, so that's just like, it's just another really good reminder of like, focus on your people and do a good job.
Yes.
And that is you can do marketing that's like the cream layer on top, but like where you're going to get so many of like your growth and your practice or your coaching, you know, whatever it is, it's going to be in that section below where it's like your referrals yes. from your base and from your people and from doing a really good job with the people and you have.
Keeping people forever is way better than having to market. So I have
totally length of, I what have, do they call that? Length of time in your business or yeah. something like that.
Yeah. I have,
yeah.
I have 5 or 6 that have been around 7.5 to 8 years. Mm-hmm. My mm-hmm. longest running athlete is I came to him. I walked up to him at a track practice. He's like, "Hey, I'm a new coach and you're right out of college. Do you want to work together?" He was 22-ish and he's 32-ish. He's gone to Kona 4 times. He just did a 225 marathon with me. And I'm like, what if I never had that conversation? Like, huge yeah. for my business. Like he's amazing. And we're family. His wedding's in 2 weeks. We're there, you know, like oh. I've been to Kona to watch him and yeah. so many of his races with his, alongside his mom and his wife. And it's just funny because it's like, that's kind of what you need though. You need those like athletes that are around. And that's what's beautiful about endurance coaching is that it's a lot of like weight loss coaches or I don't know, strength coaches. I don't know if they keep people very long, like people lose the weight and then they leave versus when you're doing this kind of stuff, you can create relationships that are
yep.
really, really, like I said, I've a ton that are over, definitely a bunch that are over 5-6 years and then a handful that are that long.
So good.
And yeah, so I had another thought about the referrals, but also just keeping the one. Oh, this is what I was going to tell you. So the one way to keep growing, but your number one focus is on your athletes is how you choose your time. So mm-hmm. I have a business process that has not changed since I've gone full time, which is I write plans when I start my day. I review Training Peaks and I write plans every day. I don't write them once a week. I write them 6 days a week. I take Saturday mornings off and I write them Sunday morning or sometime on the weekend, but I write them every day of the week, pretty equally, maybe Monday and Friday are biggest, but I do it from 9 to 12 and everybody has, if they don't have a plan for the next day, it's done by noon the day before. But the reason I do that is I'm in Training Peaks a lot, but also it's probably my strongest, if I do a morning workout, that's my strongest mental clarity part of the day. So I get all of the stuff that I'm interacting with clients and keeping them happy and making sure I have their questions answered first. Mm-hmm. Then marketing, finances, other stuff in the afternoon. So I try to focus all that early. And then I'll go into Training Peaks again when I shut down my computer and just, or even sometimes at night, like laying on the couch watching TV, like I'll just look at Training Peaks real quick on my phone just to see if there's any issues. But that's a way to like keep the client first over all this other stuff that's going on. Instead of it just being like, oh, let's go post on Instagram. Well, sometimes I post in the morning, but it's because I wrote it the day before, you know. But in general, I do that kind of creative work in the afternoon, so yeah. that way it keeps the clients first. At least yep. that's my goal.
Oh, I mean, I really think that's an extremely helpful tip that could be applied to many different businesses, not just yeah. yours. Just any type of business that's a one-on-one type. And could be a one to many or one to one type business. That is a very, very helpful tip. I've actually kind of thought about on occasion like changing all of my patient times to like between 9 and 12, and then being done by that yeah. point. Because there's times in the afternoons where if there's just been a lot of stuff going on for different patients, like by the time I get to the end of the day, I'm just like, I feel like I'm not showing up as best as I could be if we had put this, you know, at the beginning of the day.
and it's for longevity, like,
yeah,
you have to one-on-one time. Like, so most of my calls are usually in the afternoon. I don't do them in the morning because that's planned time. And I only do calls Tuesday through Thursday. Mm-hmm. But I don't do a lot of calls. I have unlimited calls with my athletes, but they don't schedule them that much because yeah. it's unlimited. They don't have to, like, it's available. Yep. So it's not, you know, it just works really well and they can just get on my calendar whenever they want. Sure. As part of their coaching, but that it helps to break it up. And I take like a legit lunch break. Like I am I put on one of my favorite TV shows my husband doesn't watch, and I sit and I eat and I watch my show and I relax and I don't care, because I coach workouts twice a week or two to three times a week at 6 a.m. I offer calls sometimes at night for the athletes that work all day long.
Sure.
I have one night a week. So I feel like I'm at races on Saturdays and Sundays sometimes, you know, or at training, you know, out there with them doing things. So I feel like in the end it's good, but sometimes, you know, the non-work from homers like, what, you sit and watch TV and eat lunch? What? I'm like, but it gets me back, and then I'm back working again with motivation instead of being like, you know, by the end. So
yeah. That's the best part though about building your own business. Like, for those that are kind of wondering if they want to change, like transition from that sort of hobby-ish part-time to full-time, obviously you have to be at a place where that makes sense and is financially feasible, but, and won't cause a ton of stress either to just go straight from part-time to full-time. But the benefit of taking the time to build a business that is yours, you can do anything, practically anything you want with it. You can build it out the way you want it to look. And that's like the freedom in it. Like right now I only really do patient care on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And then all the in-betweens are all the other things, which is like, you know, their emails and a lot of the stuff that needs to go out that helps them to be able to make sure that they're doing the things. And like, it's a lot of that supportive time and supportive care. And I get to choose what I want to do, which is amazing. So
it's great.
So like, I don't know, I guess I would encourage anybody if you're wanting to make that jump from like part-time to full-time, there's having a coach first off and a mentor that can help you do that. Huge. Like my business started really taking off when I invested in a coach for my business. Seriously, one of the best things I've ever done.
And it's funny how the investment to a lot of people will still seem crazy. Like they don't get
I know.
But when you get it, because you're like, I learned so much and I'm doing things so much more efficiently and I'm marketing myself better and I have better mindset and it's just, there's so many multitudes. And that's what I want to do, is help the newer coaches. Not even newer. Like I have a call with, I think, another level 2 coach next week to talk about this kind of stuff. So she's obviously been doing this for a while. So it's not like it's just, you know, there's something to be, I think a lot of traveling or endurance coaches have like a little bit of a chip, like, I don't need a business coach. I'm, you know, so I think I did. I think I was like, I don't need one. I'm good at, I know how to coach. It's like, well, I'm not really teaching how to coach. I'm teaching you how to market yourself and how to grow different. And how to be efficient and how to think in abundance and how to,
just
I'm a believer.
Heck, learning how to just as you mentioned, like how you speak, how you talk to people, like how you do a talk to a bunch of different athletes, like all of those types of things are things you have to learn. And those are, you know, for me, I knew when I started my practice on my side, I was like, I know nothing about business. And so like the last 5 years alone has just been investing back into everything, because I'm just trying to get better and do things more efficiently and do things better. And the better that I get at both treating and working with athletes, but also working on my business, the better my care gets for my athletes as well. Anyway, I'm like so glad that we did this today, because I know that there's a need for it. And I hope that this potentially reaches somebody, like if they are kind of on the fence between whether, like, how do I make this happen? This is a dream. Like, I want to get to that place. Like, how do I get there?
Yeah.
Having help is oftentimes like one of the best ways. Like, you will likely get there on your own, but you can potentially get there faster if you have somebody's help. Even if you know a lot of the things, like I've found the accountability, all the things that you would apply as far as like being an athlete and having a coach, it's the same thing.
It's like overwhelm with schedule. Do I bike today? Yes. Do I run today? Do I do intervals? It's the same thing. Do I do I write an email? Do I do a funnel? I don't know. So there's, do I do a podcast? Do I do, do I do all those things? And it's a pretty big deal. And I really hope that I can help some people because it's super fun. When I did my level two, I had to have a mentor, but I think a lot of coaches have a very, like, I do sometimes, like, oh, well, I don't want to like befriend another coach too much because we're competition, which is again, a scarcity mindset, which isn't good, but just having some, you know, somebody that you can talk to about these things. Like what am I do have one client in business so far. I've talked to some people, but one that I'm working with, and she's told me that, she said, like, I feel like I'm on an island with this stuff. Like, I don't have anybody to talk to. Like, I have my clients and it's me. Like, I don't have anybody. I have nobody. And it's a different, you need to have somebody that you can like talk to and just bounce things off with, you know, and someone that's experienced, that's been there and probably many of these things.
Yeah.
Cause there's challenges, but it's, if you can get through it, it is like the best. So, you know, owning your own thing and being, if you have the right, if some people probably would like to have a boss and do their, you know, and have a lower pressure because we never stop working, right? Like it's there, it's in my head all the time. Luckily it's really fun. So it's not a problem, but you don't get like, I had my son, I didn't take maternity leave. Like there was no, I can't just get rid of my clients. Like, what am I going to do? Just tell, it was, he was born in September. I had people racing at 70.3 worlds in August. And then that I was like, it was like in Austria that year. I was, you know, texting with them and their families and stuff, but I wasn't there. And then we had my son in September, or I had my son September 4th. And then my husband and I took him to Hawaii where I had four athletes racing when he was 4.5 weeks old. Yeah. Crazy, right? Yeah. So I have pictures of him in his stroller in his baby car seat at the Ironman Hawaii swim start. I had four athletes racing that year, and it was my first four that year. So I went from 0 to 4 in 1 year. And it was a big deal. And he was IVF. So we planned his birth around Ironman Hawaii.
I know. Oh my gosh.
All the
Michelle,
things you
this
learned.
Is amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, so. This is so great. Oh yeah, my goodness. Cool. That is so cool. Well, thank you so much for being on with us. First off, if people want to find you as far as for coaching on either side, how can they find you?
So I think the easiest way is just to DM me. My company is 5-3. I think it's the right guy, right? 5-V-3. The 5 is those 5 things that I was telling that weren't training with my hands earlier. Smart. And then the 3 is our who we're looking for in clients, which are those that are looking to PR, take it to the next level or world's qual, basically. It's kind of so what good. Roughly what the 3 means. And then, so it's at 5-3 racing, or easier. I have 2 accounts. So that's my account for triathlon coaching and my triathlon team. And I coach people, across the country, not just in, I'm in Virginia. And then my business coaching page, which is new, is at Coach Michelle with 2 L's Lake.
Awesome.
Pretty simple. So easy.
And you also have a newsletter as well. I'm going to link to that. What do you usually share in those email newsletters
So I have 2 of them. I've created 2 email newsletters. One is for the coaching side, and I do a monthly newsletter. Right now it's monthly. And I just sent it today, actually. It's tips and a workout and an athlete of the month, and just kind of my musings, my thoughts on a different topic each week. And then the coaching one, the business one, I'm still determining that, but that's one I've been giving out. I gave some free coaching consultations out on it. So still that the business is still developing, but it's actually something I'm spending the second half of my day mostly on right now, client work. And then that's one reason I'm sort of limiting my clients so that I can have the time,
to branch out to this.
But I'm still figuring out where, what's going to be all the balance. So yeah. So I'd love to have people check it out and, see what I'm doing. Send me a DM if you have interest of interest, I'm here to talk. So interested.
Awesome. Well, it was so great to have you. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Okay. And that's it. We'll see you next week for another episode. Take care.
Hey, did you know that up to 70% of athletes may be deficient in at least one micronutrient, if not potentially deficient in two or more? Micronutrient deficiencies like vitamin D, iron, calcium, vitamin E, B12, B9 are super common in athletes, and they can lead to things like fatigue. They can lead to injuries and fractures, getting sick a lot and missing practice, to unexplained pain, and a lot more. On the flip side though, athletes who corrected nutrient deficiencies saw improvements in VO2 max, vertical jump, grip strength, force, improved delayed onset muscle soreness, and a lot more. That's why I created the Strong to the Finish Line free guide for athletes like you to be able to train and compete symptom-free so that you can have the confidence and the power to perform at your best. Get this guide for free at drkirsten.com/finishstrong.